step by step.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Let's have a joke now.
Hey, Spencer, alcoholic joke teller. Alrighty. And I got another one from Drunk as a Skunk, 150 plus jokes for beer lovers, wine connoisseurs, and raging alcoholics. So if you've ever wondered what an alcoholic delusion looks like, it looks something like this. Sometimes when I reflect back on all the beer I drank, I feel ashamed. Then I look into the glass and think about the workers in the brewery and all of their hopes and dreams. If I didn't drink this beer, they might be out of work and their dreams would be shattered. Then I say to myself, it is better that I drink this beer and let their dreams come true than be selfish and worry about my liver.
Thank you, Spencer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Jay.
Hi,
everybody. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Turn off all devices that make noise that might or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. So if everybody is ready, we can start the meditation.
Please,
fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it's up on the screen. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the news, the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And I've asked Tyler to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
My name's Tyler, alcoholic.
Hey, Tyler.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. Erroneous?
You got it.
Yep. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such as transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the differences between the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change would hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Many of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it a God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that an alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode, or just turn them off. And we started a little late, so I'll save the introduction, and we can welcome up Peter.
We're good? This on? We're good? So my first sponsor told me with 4th of July, he says, don't drink a fifth on the 4th. So if you're new, welcome. My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for coming out on a holiday. I'm sure you guys had other plans, but it's great to be here. We had talked about, do we want to have a meeting on the 4th? And, you know, it's real easy to say, well, it's the 4th. You know, you're supposed to be barbecuing. But I remember getting arrested on the 4th of July because I was doing illegal things. And I wouldn't stay sober on the 4th, and I wouldn't stay clean. And so being at a meeting is a good place for me to be. June 23rd, 1988 is when a loving God separated me from alcohol. I'm very, very grateful for this gift of sobriety. I have a sponsor, Bob Bazanzi's out of St. Paul, Minnesota. This happens to be my home group, and I sponsor about a dozen men, and they all know that I'm their sponsor, which is usually a good thing when you see them. I'm very grateful for many, many things, although I can complain now and again, like most of us. But sometimes when I put my head on the pillow at night, and especially when I awaken in the morning, and anyone over 60 knows exactly what I'm talking about. We're really glad that our eyes opened up and we have another day. But I'm especially grateful for the mornings, especially where I'm living now, about 10, 15 minutes from here. To me, it's just something I've dreamt about for the longest time and get to share it with Marion, which makes it even better. But my mornings consist of getting up 5 o'clock, usually, sometimes earlier, and I do my prayer meditation faithfully, and I do some reading in the morning. And when I'm done with that, I'm out in my backyard, and sometimes the sun isn't even up yet, and I'm taking care of the backyard, and it's my time to commune. There's an author, James Finley, and he talks about communing and being faithful to a practice, whatever that practice might be, and the practice will be faithful to you. And so part of this communing, my grand sponsor used to talk about communing with God, being alone with God. And that doesn't mean just sitting on a mat oming for a half hour. It could be little things that we like to do, whether it's painting or taking care of a garden or going for a meditative walk, not a walk to keep in shape, but a meditative walk. Be faithful for that, and we kind of connect. And my mornings have been sacred since I got sober, pretty much, and lately that's what they are, and I'm very grateful. Little things like that. I can tell you, geez, I wish I had more money and a newer car, and who doesn't want that? But I usually find God in those little quiet moments when no one's around and it's just me and the boss, and I can have a conversation with God alone about anything. And it's just, sometimes I feel more connected doing that in the morning than sitting on a meditative mat for a half hour meditating. It's just absolutely wonderful. That's a long way from where I was when I got here. And the thing about being out there and in here untreated is that this illness, this mind of mine where the illness lays, will make me feel apart from God rather than a part of God. And so I start to live in the delusion that I can control life. It's controllable. And I do everything I can to keep it controllable because somehow I think I can control all of it, including my drinking and taking non-conference approved dry goods and getting John and Mary to do what I want, get the parents to do what I want, get the boss to do what I want, all of that stuff. And I'm living in complete delusion. What begins to happen, I get to be frustrated and I blame people when that happens. And the tension on the spring gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And when those things happen, I drink to wash that away. And what's really frightening, that can happen to me while I'm sober, going to meetings, even double-digit sobriety, that I fall into the delusion that life is controllable and I can control it. That's one of the reasons why when we show up here, at least let me speak for me, when I get here and I look at step one and step two, it wasn't a good day. Having to come to terms with it. I didn't kind of skip into step two. What a great day. I did it because there was nothing else for me to do. And what has to happen with me and countless others is that in order for me to accept what step one's talking about or what step two's talking about, I first have to come to terms that who I am and what I'm doing is unacceptable at a gut level. I mean, how many times have we tried to get someone to see our way of life and they keep going further away? It's like trying to catch a cat. The more closer you get, the further away they go. Until they come to a point like I did in June of 88 where everything I do is unacceptable. I am unacceptable. My outlook on life is wrong. And I would have fought to the end at one point for it. And I even had to take a look at, bless my dad and mom, even the systems they gave me to grow up with. I had to challenge them that perhaps they're wrong. That worked for them in the 50s and 60s. Here I am in the late 80s. That it doesn't fly anymore. I was sharing with someone earlier that there's an author, Thomas Merton, who says, and I'm going to paraphrase this, that waking up, we tend to think is going to be, I woke up, I found the Lord, isn't this great? Well, maybe not. Sometimes it's met with complete defeat of everything I've done and everything I see and everything I hear and all my belief systems are absolutely wrong. It's much needed if I'm going to embrace, I don't know where our steps are, I'm going to embrace this new way of life. I need to, at a gut level, know that I've run out of road, me running the show. And so I think I said it last week, that the freedom I seek today is no longer for me, but from me. The first person I walked into when I get sober is me. And this is not a good day. You know, we sober up and we got the sober guy who wants to stay sober, and we got the drunk guy who thinks this is nonsense and we need to get drunk. And there's that battle of spiritual warfare going on. Well, you know, how am I going to deal with this? But there's a greater part that wants to put one foot in front of the other and finally come to terms with who I am. You know, in step 10, it talks about that the problem will be removed. That's a great promise for a newcomer. But I need to be careful. The problem be removed, but the truth about the problem will always be there. Is that once a drunk, always a drunk. So here I am coming in, I'm brand new, and I'm thinking because I'm going to meetings, all my alcoholism, all my problems, all the noise in the head is just going to suddenly, you know, vanish. And I get sober, and I'm physically sober, and it seemed like it got worse. Everything was louder, and that's the stuff I used to pour alcohol on top of. I was more self-centered. I was more self-seeking. I was more self-absorbed. People talk about how people are offended nowadays. That's like a common thing. I got offended if you didn't say hello to me. It was the end of the world. I'm ready to go to war. How could you not say hello to me? I got 2 days back. You know, if I read How It Works and you didn't give me a standing ovation, I'm not coming back anymore. I mean, it was like that. I was a raw nerve. I remember I was in treatment and they gave us, the H&I would come in and they'd give away 30-day chips and 90-day chips and things like that. And I knew they were going to give me a 30-day. And I'm up in my bunk planning a speech that when they hear this, A.A., Bill and Bob are going to turn over in their grave saying, why didn't we know this guy? You know, it's kind of like I was so upside down, you know, going to meetings and not drinking and holding my breath. And what happened to me, it was December 22nd, 1988. I hit another bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous. What can happen? The sober bottoms. Not in sobriety, just sober. And it was December 22nd, 1988. I'm living in Minnesota. There's 8,000 feet of snow out. It's below zero. I'm driving something called, it's literally called a rent-a-wreck. It was like $2 a day for a wreck, you know. And I'm driving somewhere in Minneapolis, and I can't take this anymore. This meeting stuff. You know, I hear these people talk about steps and traditions. I don't even know what this means. 7 treatment centers. I didn't even know who Bill and Bob was when I got into AA. And the tension is getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And I'm wanting to act out 9 different ways. And I'm getting really thirsty. And I was driving somewhere in Minneapolis. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is what we're going to do. First liquor store we're going in. Whatever money I have in my pocket, or the first bar, or if I see some cats dealing on a coin, I'm getting whatever they got, I'm taking. It's got to get away from me right now. And I was on thin ice, and something prompted me to make a prayer. And I did. And I'm driving while I'm praying. And it was something like, God, I'm in trouble, you got to help me. Which is a complete prayer. And I kept driving past the liquor stores, I kept driving past the bars. God was driving the car, quite frankly, doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I think what would have happened if for some reason I would have gotten drunk, besides you not having a different speaker here tonight, I probably would have been, you know, dead by now. I can't say for certain because I'm not God, but I would have, or I would have, you know, been out there for years and years and years. And so I get on this highway, Highway 61, and I find myself in Cottage Grove, Minnesota. And I drive up to this guy's house, and he let me in. He was helping me a little bit. And he was an old timer in AA. He had 7 years. And when you count in day, 7 years is like they have a monument outside, what you want, you know. And he says, what's going on? And I begin to purge all, you know how newcomers are. We just purged up. You don't even get a chance to talk. I just give you it all. And it's like from here to there to here to, and I'm all over the place. And when I came up for air, I've shared this from a million podiums. He said something like this to me. He says, Peter, where are you with God and the 12 steps? And I paused for a moment. I says, well, when do you start the steps? And he says, when you stop throwing up, you're late. I didn't want to hear this answer. What I wanted him to do is pour a cup of coffee and sit down and tell me, I understand, I feel the same way, life is tough, let's have a drink. So his answer ruffled my feathers, quite frankly. In the big book, it says, perhaps we've disturbed him on the question of alcoholism, and he did. And he went on to share with me that I'm suffering from alcoholism and I'm sober, which can happen to a guy like me as an alcoholic, the guy on page 21, that I can die from alcoholism without ever putting a drink in me. I could be walking around in Alcoholics Anonymous, and alcoholism doesn't care about the length of time. But suffering from full-blown alcoholism, that's why I had to learn from good sponsors that this process of recovery isn't linear, but transformational. You got cats with 90 days who are lit up and someone with 9 years who's in the dark. It's really about the spiritual awakening that's guaranteed to us. And so some of the untreated alcoholism I was experiencing then, and I've had my taste of it now and again. I think I said last week that this mind is not going anywhere. Because I make 5 or 10 or 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, the mind doesn't say, okay, we can't touch him, let's go on to someone else. It's probably going to scream louder. Like that old thing, the closer, if you will, you get to the Lord, the louder this other power is going to scream. So some of the things we talk about on page 52 are the bedevilments, which is current unmanageability, which is all step one stuff. Having trouble in personal relationships. They're not talking about how to spat with the husband or wife. You know, maybe he had a little thing with the kids. Or maybe a best friend and I kind of bumped heads that day. Maybe it got some little dialogue going on. They're not even talking about that. That happens. The human condition, my human condition's flawed and broken. I'm the car that leaks oil. When I drive away, there's an oil spot. That's me. That's how God designed it. They're talking about trouble in personal relationships. I'm constantly in dialogue about somebody did something to me. And most of them are dead. You know, you wake up in the morning, you ever do this? Wake up at maybe like I do, 5 a.m., open up your eyes, and you're right in the middle of a heated argument with somebody. You know, we're planning vengeance all day. And in my mind, I'm like Clint Eastwood in Fistful of Dollars. You know, I got the cigarette, the thing hanging. I'm like just so cool. I got all the answers, and I always win. Then I meet them, and I fail. Having trouble with personal relations, can't control my emotional nature. I fly off the handle about anything. Or I'm either really happy, exhilarated about something, or I'm in deep depression about something. I do this all day long. This is not just a spot. Like I got there today, I had a tough day, I was in my head a lot. That happens. I'm in there. Can't control my emotional nature. Prey to misery and depression. I'm full of fear. I feel like I can't help anyone. I can't make a living. I have a job. I hate what I do. I don't try to grow and expand. I just complain a lot. And if you ask my coworkers what kind of work I'm in, they wish I quit. You know, or I don't have a job and I sit home and watch TV all day expecting someone to knock on my door and says, you want to run my company? And I know I'm going to hit Powerball any day because God loves me more. You know, so that kind of stuff. I can't make a living. Full of fear, and that's the culprit here. If there's a thread for me that runs through a lot of this work is I had to quit playing God, why it didn't work. And I can see, even in sobriety, how many times I'm trying to range the chessboard and calculate your next move. because I'm playing God. Selfish and self-centered to the core. That's why it's always a sense of urgency to pray, to meditate, to work with others, to get to a meeting, to write some inventory, to pray, to meditate, to get to a meeting, to help others and write some inventory and put my life on the service plane rather than it's all about me. Because this thing called alcoholism can be very current. For me, I can never look at my alcoholism. Well, when I came in, I was alcoholic. Now I'm in AA and I make 90 meetings in 90 days and alcoholism has suddenly gone away. It doesn't. And this mind is always here. And the only thing that can combat the mind is God. I heard something very profound the other day. And it was, my job is not to combat evil. Or my job is not even to combat alcoholism. My job is to seek God and please God. And then I'm victorious. Because God always wins. I mean, that's just, you can debate that all you want. God always wins. And I'll go through some darkness and have some spiritual warfare. But as soon as I get to a place of surrender, God, I'm yours, do with me whatever you want. Your will, not mine, be done. I'm quit doing your job. Suddenly I breathe again. And I find myself getting traction. And I get inspired again because I'm living in spirit. I have inspiration rather than walking around full of me. More God, less me. I've heard many people say, well, you got to get a bigger God. No, I need a smaller me. I remember an old sponsor used to say that. You got to get, they used to say right-sized. Got to get right-sized. So when I get here in 1988, I got an idea about alcoholism, but I don't know the depths of alcoholism. And quite frankly, a lot of me was just pointing at the bottle of whiskey as the problem and the pills. That's it. And I got to get up enough information here. I got to get strong enough to resist the temptation. That's how they do it here. And I'm sober and I'm having a problem. I'm having a problem living life on God's terms. I still want to live life on life's terms. And I fail miserably at that. I don't do life on life's terms. I still don't want to do life on life's terms because that means it's on my terms. That means I get what I want, when I want, how I want it, how often I want. And I start to follow the road I think I'm supposed to be on. And I get consumed with me and my plans and designs. And I forfeit every invitation that God sent to me because I'm not listening. I got to climb the corporate ladder. God says, you're in the wrong business. So I need to be right-sized here. And one of the things I've woke up to many years ago, and God reminds me every once in a while, that life is not according to the script I wrote. In fact, a lot of recovery makes me really uncomfortable. Common sense becomes uncommon sense. I'm going to do things that I was always told don't do that, like trust. Trust people. Love people unconditionally. I'm not weak. I'm not a coward. People will take advantage of me. I'm tough. I'm from New York. Nonsense. But something happens when you start to do that and start to find yourself walking in the light. I can't even go back there anymore. I don't know how I live like that anymore. So one of the things I'm grateful for my alcoholism and getting beat to a pulp, quite frankly, it beat me into a state of reasonableness, meaning my sponsor and the elders in AA can negotiate with me. I'm listening. You know, if you ever try to sit down and do business deal with someone who's non-negotiable, they want what they want, the meeting's probably going to fall right on its butt. But if you can have a negotiation and we can talk about this and we can come up with a compromise. And so what alcoholism did beat me to a place when a sponsor would said, I want you to go to that meeting and I don't want you to go to that meeting. I said, okay, okay. I thought they were nuts. I thought a lunacy commission should be appointed for them very often. But what else was I going to do? My way again? Because it doesn't work. And you know, I think I shared this already, that there's something that goes in order for me to see clearly and hear clearly what's outside of me. I need to experience the power which is inside of me first. Before I make any moves. Now, nowhere in the big book does it say no relationships in the first year. It doesn't say that in the book. It's a fellowship thing. But there's a lot of truth behind it. I'm trying to select my next victim based on what I know. And so is she. And two sickies don't make a wellie. So I'm trying to have a relationship or find a career path when I don't even know what I like and dislike yet. And it was really God's business, God's job. And he embraces that. Let me run your life. The thing I learned, again, a lot of these things through mistakes, is that God is constantly seeking me out, seeking you out, begging to have a relationship with us, going to any lengths to have a relationship. Sometimes we'll look at rejection, oh my God, rather than redirection. He closed the door on purpose to get you there because he wants to get with you and say, this is what I need you to do. And somehow when we follow God's plan, and I can tell you from experience, I've been on that path many times, following God, and you know it. You wear the world like a loose garment. Everything gets light. It's loosey-goosey. When I'm pushing up against life, here comes tension, and now I need to control. I need to control everyone. And I become really judgmental and critical because everything is a threat. Everyone is a threat. Because you get in the way of my plans for me. Sometimes the third step says we turn our will and life over to care of God. If we looked at actual practice, turn my will and life over to care of me. I'm giving it back to me again. I never really released anything. So I get a sponsor when I get a real sponsor when I get back from Minnesota. And this guy was a tough cookie, quite frankly. I caught what I like to say is the last days of those hardcore sponsors. Now we sometimes in certain circles got to watch how you say things and how you present it and all this nonsense, and people are dying because of it. But they didn't pull any punches, and he gave me orders, and he barked them all the time. And told me to do some things out of the book and began to explain to me the depths of alcoholism. And I didn't even know. 7 treatment centers and making meetings. I don't even know that the first step covers 43 pages plus doctor's opinion. And if you look at the rest of the book, 6 and 7 a paragraph each, how it works at 2 steps, into action 5 through 11, working with others. We've had an awakening. He's going to give me suggestions how to work with others. Step 1. Basically 53 pages to drive home to me what I'm up against. 17 to 23 is about the body. 23 to 43 is about this mind, which is not going anywhere. And the only thing that's going to combat that and shut it down is God. And so what this work is about is putting, if you will, my hand in God's hand. Waking up to this power called God and liking the effect produced by it. So I thought it was just keep away from the whiskey, resist temptation by going to meetings, and somehow that'll be a buffer between me and the booze. And it was a lie, because 6 months later, as I said earlier, I'm really thirsty. I'm even looking to pick up narcotics at this point, which I hadn't touched for a while. I need something to get me away from me right now. I don't care what it is. I'll sniff it, I'll shoot it, I'll inject it, I'll drink it. This is not good. And the old voice came back, who are you kidding with this sobriety thing again? You know, I'm living in Minnesota. They talk different. They live different. And I sound like a Neanderthal because I'm from Brooklyn. How you doing? You know, it's like, you're not from around here, are you? You know? Yeah, growing up in Brooklyn's tough because Paulette will identify with this. Even when we say I love you, it sounds like a threat. It's not smooth. So my sponsor sits me down. And one of the things he had me do was look at the first 9 pages of Bill's story, how I thought, felt, and drank like Bill. I never went to college. Bill was a wannabe Wall Street guy. You know, Bill was a visionary. I need help back then with any vision involved me, not the good of you. And so there was a lot of different in lifestyle. Bill was in, you know, grew up in a different time than me. But when I went through the first 9 pages that way, I said, I'm just like Bill. And what my sponsor had me do was write out something Bill did in the first 9 pages, a brief history of my drinking and any drugs that were involved. And I had to write down about unmanageability and consequences, and we compared it to Bill's story. And I was further convinced I'm just like this guy, an alcoholic. And I even got to see how I'm doing without spiritual muscles and just sober. I'm not good. I'm not okay. Yeah? I'm not okay. Because alcoholism gets a life by taking mine, drunk or sober. It doesn't at least stay at the front door and say, well, he's in AA now. We can't touch him. No, it comes right in. It goes to bed with me. It showers with me. Alcoholism spends more time with me than my own wife because it's up here in the head. And sometimes there was a gentleman from Colorado said something that shook me. He said, alcoholism will get you where you think you're good. I'm good with money. I'm good at my job. I run a company. I'm good at this. I'm a good service guy. It'll get right in there because you're not looking for it. An ego takes over and look at me. And I walk right into it again. It says, we admit our powers over alcohol that our lives have become unmanageable. Two parts of step one. I didn't know this. Again, I'm focused on resist the temptation, get enough information in AA so when I think about drinking, somehow it'll just go away. And it was getting closer and closer and closer. As I've said a few times already, I'm not okay without drinking. I have nothing, no medicine to pour on top of that. We admit our powers over alcohol dash that our lives have become unmanageable. And I had to take a look at that dash. I was living and stuck on the dash. Our lives had become unmanageable. Let's go there. Our lives had become unmanageable. So I lived in an abandoned building. I saw something on Facebook today. And I get this feed once in a while of the Lower East Side of Manhattan back in the day. Avenue A, B, C, and D, East 7th Street, East 8th. This was East 7th and Avenue C, blown out buildings. And I was looking for me walking by somewhere, you know. And I said, oh, my God, that was my environment. Yeah. And so I wasn't bathing. I wasn't eating properly. And I was tore up from the floor. So I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, yeah. And I'm going to meetings. I get a little sober job. I'm bathing, I'm shaving, you know, I'm getting a haircut, I got clean clothes on. And the old timers, bless their hearts, would say, hey, you look good, you sound good, keep coming back. You look good, you sound good, keep coming back. So now I'm thinking somewhere in this deranged mind of mine, my life was unmanageable. It is very manageable now. Because Joe, the old timer, says, you look good and sound good, keep coming back. I got clean clothes on. I got clean jeans, I got clean sneakers. Got a fresh haircut, clean shaven. I just showered, smell good. I can buy cologne now. My life is manageable. Biggest lie I can fall for, because that's not what it's talking about. The unmanageability is not knowing what the day is going to look like when the drink says we're drinking and I can't stop it and we go, when suddenly shows up. And I don't know what that day is going to look like. If you're around here a while, you'll know this. How many folks we know are coming up on a year and we lose them? Or just make a year and we lose them? How's that happen? They were just here. They just made a cake. They're coming up on a cake. How did that happen? Because alcoholism, not alcoholism. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's very, very patient. Isn't it funny in how it works? It says, remember, we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Remember, because I might forget. On page 76, it says, remember, we agreed at the beginning, that's like when you start off, to go to any lengths to find the spiritual experience. And on page 79, it says it again, reminding ourselves we were going to go to any lengths. Three times it says, remember, remember, and remind. You know why? Because I might forget. I got the money, I got the relationship, I got the house, I got the car, now I got the kids. You know, I sponsor a lot of guys with kids. They're aging by the day. They used to call me up with inventory saying, my home group is crazy. I don't know what to do. We get that stuff, and it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And alcoholism get right in there. Yeah. So admitted powers over alcohol, lies have become unmanageable. I get comfortable. My life appears to be manageable. I got all my ducks in a row. I'm arranging life to suit myself. I'm the master of my life now. And I start to book talks. I start to rest on my laurels. I go to a few meetings, same meetings. I'm not going to go from Pompano to Boynton Beach. It's too far. I'm not going to go from Boca to Fort Lauderdale. I'll tune into Zoom. It's easier. You know, I'm not going to drive an hour for the meeting. I'm not going to take too many commitments. I'm doing good. I feel good now. Nothing grows in comfortability except mold. And I start to get plaque on the soul. Now I'm relying on an experience I had, a spiritual awakening I had a year, two, three, four, 5 years ago, and tell the newcomer, well, I had that. The newcomer always says, what are you doing now? We change the subject. I'm either growing or I'm going. So I got to be careful that manageability. What happens, that dash, it's a horizontal line. It becomes a big vertical. It goes vertical, big wall. And I'm living stuck on that dash. I'm living in the second half of the first step. What I'm trying to do now is appear to be good and sound good all the time. Look good and sound good. Look good and sound good. Not only convince you, but convince me. There's an author, Thomas Merton, talks about how we wrap ourselves up in bandages of basically money, property, and prestige to get approval from you. And when I look in the mirror to convince me, I'm okay because that's all I got going on. But there comes a time and a place in a day where it all falls away and I realize I'm nothing. It's a dangerous way to live for a civilian, let alone an alky, when I got this thing in pursuit of me all the time. So I got to go back to the first half of the first step that basically tells me, Pete, we don't care how long you're sober, you are going to drink. That's what the first half of step one says. Powerless, no power, no choice, no control. I'm screwed sober. That's why page 24 talks about this, that I can't think the drink through, play the tape to the end, keep it green, go to another meeting, which is good, go to another meeting, but I leave the meeting after an hour. Okay, go to another meeting and make another meeting, but it's going to get me alone. It's going to ambush me. I need soul food. I need spiritual muscles to combat that, where there's not even a temptation anymore. Other than that, I'm running on empty. No power, no choice, and no control in the mind before I even pick up a drink. Sober, in the meeting, I'm blown up with alcoholism. I just haven't drank yet. And then once I drink, you know what happens. Everyone knows this answer. I need a second drink. It's like asking a crackhead, take one hit off of that pipe and save the rest for Christmas. I got everybody's attention with crack. I don't know what's going on here. Yeah. Okay. It's the same thing. You know, an alcohol goes into a bar, the bartender says, happy fourth, the first beer's on me. The drunk is not leaving. He's got to, or she's got to get a second drink. The fuse is lit. And the third drink's screaming, so you're going to have one more, one for the road, one more. Let me buy the house a drink. And you don't get out. And you're sitting there going, there's a barbecue, my wife's waiting for me in an hour. My family was having, it was like the Sopranos. My family was having a reunion one time at my uncle's house in Brooklyn. And I don't know what prompted this, but all the Marinellis were showing up and distant relatives. It was a big thing at my uncle's house, and I was supposed to be there. And my dad sat with me and says, make sure you're there. Don't embarrass me. I say, swear, of course I'm going to be there. I called my uncle's house, came out of a blackout, calling from a payphone. It was after midnight. My uncle took the call and he gave it to me. He said, you better call your father. Not only was he embarrassed, but he's furious. Everyone was waiting for you. Where the hell are you? And I got off the phone. Now, during the day, while I'm doing what I'm doing, I used to walk to the streets before I got found in an abandoned building. I used to walk to the streets, always with a jug on me, drinking. I have a brown paper bag. That was my thing. And cop some pills and just obliterated. And as the hours are ticking, I go, okay, I got to get on a train. Got to get to Brooklyn. Got on a train. I got plenty. They're not going to eat till late. And next thing you know, it's 2:00 in the morning. I knew I had to get out and I can't. That's powerless. That's the allergy. That's the craving. What I would do is get stuck in more, M-O-R-E. I get stuck in the more. I need more, a little bit more, and I can't get out. Civilians don't understand that. We do. And I can dress up. I could dress like a fancy guy from Park Avenue and be on a park bench. Alcoholism doesn't care. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and really patient. It's got all the time in the world. And I had to get that at a gut level. I've heard folks say, bless their hearts, that the first three steps are conclusions of the mind. If that works for you, God bless you. It doesn't work for me. If anything, any conclusions my mind comes up with is a drink with it. There's something selfish. It's not a good day when I got an idea. Run. Call an emergency group conscious meeting, you know. They're felt, a book says, concede to our innermost self. It doesn't say, think about this, reflect upon it, and come up with an answer. Concede to our innermost self. Submit under pressure in here. Alcohol beat me into a state of reasonableness. When the spirit talks, hey, we're done. We need to reach out for help. That's something that goes on in here. was suddenly we're making a call or walking into a meeting, I become really teachable. It's called desperation, the gift of desperation. So the first half of the first step is the thing that's going to tell me I'm going to drink, guaranteed. I would tell new guys in places I work, I says, I don't care what you do, how often you do it, what the first step says is me and you were drinking and there's no way out, period. It's non-negotiable. And I usually annoy the hell out of them, but I got their attention because that's how it was presented to me. Pete, I don't care how many meetings you make. I don't care who your sponsor is. I don't care how many times you go to church. Step one says you're drinking. The time and place is going to come where a double vodka looks better than God or the meeting or keeping a commitment. I'm getting dressed to go to a meeting? No. The only thing that's going to get in the way of that and unhook me from that or separate me from that is getting soul food or getting God. A whole lot of God, a whole lot less of me. So what step one does after 43 pages is put me in a corner. And a book says the more hopeless we feel, the better. So I wasn't feeling too good about me when I got here. When the sponsor got done with me with step one, I was really feeling squirrely. Now what do I do? You're telling me that this step says I'm doomed. He says, exactly. And I got to a place of, okay, even sober, I'm unacceptable. Not a bad person. We're not saying a bad person. But what I'm doing, my outlook on life, drinking aside, is unacceptable. Here's a good way to look at it. If the police were able to tap into my mind, How many times a day would I get arrested? That's the problem. If God was sitting next to me, would I be doing or saying or thinking about some of the things that go on in his head? Oh, no. That's the problem. It's got to get eliminated. Will it ever get completely eliminated? Probably not. I don't know. God knows. But my job is to chop wood and carry water and get as close to that as I can. And by the way, when I say close to God, there's no proximity between us and God. It's closer than our own breath. When I got to find God. It's kind of like a point I got to get right with God. Then we wake up one day, he was never lost. It was me who walked away. I wasn't looking. I wasn't listening. I wasn't hearing. So there's this wedge between me and this power called God. Because that's what the steps are about. It's all soul work, basically. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I can't stop drinking. And sober, I'm going to go back to drinking. And the insanity I'm experiencing is all step one stuff. I'm acting out. My illness has gone underground, resurfaced in sex and food, etc. Mine, sir, showed up in food. I got this wonderful little eating disorder going on that I'm keeping a secret. It's how it showed up. It will show up in gambling and while I'm sober. Again, I get painted into a corner. And at that point when I realize, hey, I am screwed here. This is all going to take me back to that which is killing me. And this time I know it's going to do me in. Besides, now I have a wife or kids or a job. And I don't want to lose that. But I am. Now for me, sober a number of years here, I'm still under an experience where anything I put before God, I'm losing. So it's a holiday, 4th of July. I have a commitment. I take my commitment. I'm going to Mike, I can't make it. I'm having a barbecue. Shame on me. I have a commitment. Someone had called me to speak in the middle of the week. It's about an hour and 40-minute drive from where I live in Fort Lauderdale, and middle of the week, an hour, 40-minute drive, speaker meeting. And I called up a buddy of mine, and I says, what would you do? He says, you forgot about the early days? We used to drive 3 hours to go hear somebody. I called the office. I'll be there. I spoke to my wife. She says, how come you're not going? And she knows I'll go to Timbuktu for a meeting. But see how subtle that is? It's a Wednesday night. You want to, you got a nice little Wednesday meeting. It's comfortable. You're going to drive almost 2 hours. Yeah, I am. Make a road trip out of it. Cunning, baffling, and powerful, and very, very patient. So this, I don't know how I'm doing on time here. Okay. There's something I just wanted to share with you on page 24. It says, at a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, not some, I pass into the state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. So I have a desire to stop drinking. Welcome. Come on in. It's the only requirement for membership, desire to stop drinking. No one's going to check you at the door. It's not a club. Like a golf club, you got to be the right color, have enough money. I got a desire to stop drinking. I did drugs too. Come on in. But this tells me in order to stay sober, desire is going to wear out. Because tomorrow I may not have a desire because I'm still in the mind. And mind is fickle. It's double-minded. Today, Jesus, tomorrow, Rambo. It says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. I'm unable at certain times to bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the memory and suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. I'm without defense against the first drink. I go into my fifth treatment center in 1980-something, and I weigh about 130. I got a hole in my arm. It's infected. It's an abscess. I'm urinating blood. No one wants to come near me. That's not a self-pity story. This is where I was. I blew a job as a longshoreman. I was fired. Great job. No woman would come near me. No friends. I'm living the life. And I can't take it. I want to die. I get into my fifth treatment center. I'm done. I'm so done with all of this. And somewhere during that 9-week stay, but drinking is kind of okay. I got discharged on a Saturday. I'm blind drunk Monday. Once I drink, I like to drink more. I have to drink more. I got to drink more. I need to drink more. And now I like to eat pills. I just like to eat Valium with my drinking. The lower and more numb I can get, the better, because life hurt. I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous and life still hurts. It's still unmanageable. I'm deluding myself into thinking, well, it's manageable now because everyone says hello to me. That's wonderful. Everyone says hello. We're glad to see you, especially the newcomers. But we leave and we go out there. Well, I can't go to the 4th of July fireworks to serve and beer, so I'm going to go home. I can't go to my daughter's wedding because they're going to be drinking, so I got to go home. I can't go to the bar mitzvah or the christening because they're serving liquor. I can't go there. I can't go to a restaurant because they serve liquor. Now I'm living in a cave saying I'm sober. What a horrible way to live. And as long as I'm operating from this place called the mind, the external world owns me. If I'm operating out of a place of self-reliance and self-will, the external world owns me. Everyone and everything has ownership of Peter Marinelli. And I don't even know it. I'm a prey to misery and depression as long as my eyes are open. Because everything hurts. And I'll tell you, when I got here in 1988, I was that guy, 28 years old, walking around with a 14-year-old outlook on life. How am I supposed to have a relationship with anyone? I had to grow up in AA, grow up spiritually in AA. But I had to really get what step one was talking to me about. Experientially, do I identify what Bill's saying? Experientially, am I identifying with Dr. Silkworth is saying about the phenomenon called craving and this mental obsession? And am I in a place of willing to have what he called this psychic change or spiritual awakening? Am I willing to do whatever it takes to get there? Desperation will do it for me, the gift of desperation. I know when I was desperate on the street, if there wasn't non-conference approved dry goods on this corner, I didn't go home. I'm up in Harlem, I'm up in Bed-Stuy, I'm in Conan, wherever I had to go. And if for some reason the liquor store that I would frequent happened to be closed, I don't go home. I go to the next block to find another liquor store. That's how I found the bootleggers in the projects one time. I'm drinking. I got to drink. I need to drink. I must drink. Nothing's sending me home. It's that way with this here. I ain't leaving until I get some sort of awakening here, because I can't go back to that way of life. Last thing, and I got to get at it because it's 8:15. This mind is part of the unmanageability, and the insanity that we talk about to get freed of in step two is all current in step one. It's all step one stuff. have a mind that will take me back to that which is killing me. As I said earlier, gets a life by taking my... The most insane thing I'll ever do sober is pick up a drink. I never picked up the first drink drunk. The most insane thing I'll ever do is from a place called sober. And that's not only a drink. It's called infidelity. It's called stealing from my employer. It's called not doing my taxes. It's called neglecting my health. It just goes on and on and on. I'm living like I'm out there in here, and it doesn't work. And it's all generated by this predator that's going to be with me till I take my last breath. It's a four-letter word called the mind. Bring the body and the mind will follow. Why would I do that? Bring the body, have an awakening, and get rid of the mind as quick as possible. It's the thing. I got up at 5. It's 7:15. It's 8:15 now. That's about 15 hours I'm up about. I'm terrible at math. About 15 hours. You think my mind loved me since I've been up this morning? Had all good things to say? Pete, you know, you're really a good guy. Way to go. It doesn't do that. It looks to start fights. Argues. By the way, I should be running for president because I know what to do. You know, and they're going to start a fundraiser for Pete Marinelli, who has no college education, can't run a company, but I'll run for president. This is what the head tells you all day long. I know you guys do it too. When you watch the debates, so I can do a better job. That's the head. And somewhere in there it says, you know what? Let's have a drink. Let's have a drink. So step two, we'll get to next week, is the pointer out of this and towards the solution. That this power greater than me is going to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. It says God could and would if he was sought. Then we get to a place that God can and has. An experiential I can talk to you about that. God can and has because I sought him out. Not because of anything good about me, was purely out of desperation. I can't drink because to drink is to die. It's up in here, right in here. That's all I got. Peace.
All right, let's thank Peter one more time. And we're going to have our secretary's report.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary.
Hey, Ryan.
Hi. In keeping with the Seventh Tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. We also have QR codes on the backs of the chairs. If you want to give through Venmo, we do that as well. I've asked Mike to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in AA identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. So let's welcome up Mike.
Mike, alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we are cured, we are able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem the alcoholic centers in his mind, rather than in his body. Page 23. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Great. 1940 style big book sponsorship from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should this sacred approach back into his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75%+ success rate. Does anybody need a big book sponsor? Raise your hand. All right, if you're too shy to raise your hand, just come stand awkwardly up here and someone will go talk to you. Can the recovered alcoholics raise your hand? Awesome. If your hand's not up, talk to someone whose hand is. We also have some screen announcements. Intergroup is where you can buy AA-related literature and medallions. Intergroup is also responsible for creating our where and when and scheduling the AA hotline. Stop by and visit them. BCIC, Broward County Institutions Committee, is responsible for bringing meetings into places where people like us can't get to an AA meeting, such as jails, detoxes, and rehabs. They meet monthly to organize the meeting schedules at the 12-step house. Is anybody here part of BCIC? Awesome. So if you have any questions, talk to Jay. Also, what's next? Oh, Monday nights, we have our big book study, same room, same time, 7:15. We are reading A Vision for You, so if you want to come read about what a vision for your life looks like, come check us out on Monday. We have Peter speaking for us again next week, third session, right? Third session, so it was on point tonight, so I'm looking forward to that. And that's it. All right. We have CDs, mugs, large print big books, and big little red books and big book dictionaries for sale on the piano in the back. If you're interested in any of those, just see any home group member. And we meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. We ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
We have tonight's session and all past speakers podcasted at alcoholicsandgod.org. Again, I'd like to invite everybody to the Monday night big book study, and those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. And we can close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Can't get it right. It doesn't matter. just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man.
shine, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Everywhere I go,
Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Day. brand new way. Show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms. And here in this moment that we share, nothing could come in. Song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you? tape. Got one man that just won't set me free. But clap your hands and believe me, children. Thank you very much.